Welcome to the C Word, the Conservatives podcast. Today we're talking to the Green Tea podcast and sustainability. I'm Chloe Rumsey, an objects conservative based in Manchester, England.
I'm Solange Masher, a book conservator based in Sheffield, England.
And we're joined today by two other podcasters. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Roxy Sperber. I'm a paintings conservator based in Indianapolis, Indiana, in the United States. And I am the host of one of the hosts of the Green Tea podcast.
I'm Lindsay Williams. I'm a conservation technician in book and paper in the Chicagoland area of the United States in Illinois. And I'm the editor producer and occasional host.
Hooray! Yeah, didn't that sound professional? Didn't that sound professional? Yeah. So you're from the sustainability group with the AIC. How did the group choose a podcast?
Well, I would say during COVID, I was the chair of the sustainability committee. This is Roxy. We were sort of, the whole world was revamping. We were doing a lot more of this Zooming and, video chat, which is something, if you can remember before that, we didn't do a lot of. I remember when I first joined the committee, it was all just like a phone call and you didn't see anybody. You didn't really know who you were talking to. It wasn't really great for team building. So we kind of jumped right in, and that was something I'd wanted to do anyway. I was like, oh my gosh, it's so important to see people's faces when you're talking to them, especially when you're working together in this sort of, you know, the United States is huge. A lot of these people who are on the sustainability committee are from all over the place, and you don't necessarily, you've never met in person a lot of times. And so we did a lot of webinars because it was something people were, you know, looking for. They could spend work hours and get paid if they work for institutions to listen to webinars. And we thought, you know, this is a great way to kind of feature work that has been done. And we had a couple of series that are still available on YouTube, and we continue to do them in certain contexts. We've had Ask an Expert, I think, was one of the series. So we have a couple series that are still going when that's the appropriate context. But what we kind of started to see was that it was harder and harder for us to host the webinars, and also for folks to like come on and actually participate, because workdays got busier. And so we thought, well, what do we listen to constantly as conservators while we're at the bench? We always can kind of do audio, you know, or most of the time. So we thought that would be a really great way to kind of transition these conversations we're having, and also have a slightly like less pressure because it's an edited format as opposed to a live format. It's shorter conversations. Also, we've had a few guests that are not native English speakers, and I think that made them feel a lot more comfortable that they weren't live. You know, I was like, it's all good. If you trip over your words, we can edit things. Thanks to Lindsay, who I'll let get a word in edgewise in a minute. But that's sort of my perspective, at least on the origin. And I will say Lindsay has been the spine of this operation because she has incredible technical skill that I certainly don't. So if you want to speak to the technical portion of that, Lens, you could totally do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's amazing, but
it seems that way to me.
The irony is it was five of us that started, and it became very quickly just Roxy and I. And when I joined it, I was like, oh, well, I'll do like the graphic design and I'll do bits and pieces here, but I don't want to do any of the audio editing. I was like, I don't have time for that.
That was me as well. Totes. Now I love it.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. I get to hear the whole episode and then not have to be the one talking. it ended up working out really well. And then last year we got a third person back for us when we got a new kind of slate for the committee. So we are now three. But Rachel's on the Pacific Coast and she works in private practice and has a very kind of irregular schedule. So she mostly does hosting when we need somebody in that kind of time zone.
And how much are you supported by the AIC?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, we do have funding for our committee. It's minimal, I would say, but the AIC, because we're like a subset, a group within AIC, AIC is a huge organization, and they have some groups are like a little bit more self-funded because they charge to be a member. We do not as the sustainability committee, so we don't have as much funding, and the funding system is changing slightly. So since I rolled off as chair, they have changed the funding system. So I don't want to speak too granularly because I haven't actually experienced that. But
Right.
We do have some funding, so like we're able to pay for our software, although I think we ended up not needing to, right? Because it's all free. So we bought some microphones. We
Yeah.
bought some, like if people have written a book or something we want to talk to them about, we sometimes buy the literature, but we don't pay our guests, full transparency. We usually see it as kind of a, opportunity to advertise or to shout out what you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know the ethics of
Professional
that we can
development.
debate, I guess. But yeah, a professional development, exactly. And usually people are super happy to talk about their work in sustainability specifically. So,
And the fact that we're all kind of amateur at this, we're still really kind of learning what to do, and learning what we like about it. Now that we're 22 episodes in, y'all have a much longer track record for podcasting. I'm sure the first few episodes don't sound the way they do now.
Yeah, I'd
So
love to hear about your tips for like sustainability, literally.
yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, in terms of money and paying guests, we don't either. We'd love to. That's our main, like, because we speak so much about we should be paid properly, and people are so valuable, and volunteering is getting people to free labor, blah blah blah. And then we're like, hi, do you want to talk to us for free on a weekend?
And then on balance, there's also the issue, like if you are being funded by someone, then they will have a say in
Yes.
the direction and the tone and, how much control do you want to give up? So there's that question. We have, last season, we actually had sponsorship and we did some adverts and we did a video promotion for an environmental monitoring company that we really liked.
Yeah.
And
That was really nice.
that was great. However, it did take a lot of time managing that whole relationship and the amount that we could charge them. We did charge them properly, I think, but in terms of the man hours that went in to producing the adverts and managing the relationship, I think maybe may have taken too much time and not necessarily remunerated us for the amount of hours and work it was. So I'm not sure that it was a sustainable model for us. I don't know. We need to actually talk about it as a group.
Yeah, we've not.
So
I mean, we've all been, three of the five of us have just had babies, so it's been quite a sort of tumultuous year, hasn't it, Islange?
That's true. We were down two people that season, so maybe it's been more manageable.
So we've not had a chat about it, but I feel like it was a kind of experimental model.
Yeah, we've
So
got a lot to take away from the experience.
But either way, we've built a relationship with a company that we really liked. We've promoted a product that we thought was really, really good. And someone will listen to those episodes and will go, huh, yeah, I need an environmental monitoring system. This one looks really good. So it's useful content, and I think that's what we wanted to promote anyway. So
In fact, when we were talking about companies, because we made a big list of companies that we could approach, and there were some sort of in sustainable companies on there. What was it? The turtle boxes or something? I don't think I
Oh yeah.
contacted them in the end. But that so in a way, like maybe advertising can be a platform to actually promote sustainability, if you're pushing the type of companies that you actually believe can
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
help.
Do you think in terms of just your own energy, like sustaining people power, so to speak, like that's something I found quite interesting that both of us have been quite committed to this just because we really enjoy it and we have fun, we're learning, we're growing. But of course it's always, like you say, things happen in life and people change jobs, people have families, whatever. And so I don't know, I feel like a lot of times these sort of wonderful, nimble, like startup type projects can easily fizzle just because people get tired and don't have the bandwidth. So is it just a matter of having enough people on your team, have you found? Because you guys have been going for quite a few years now, right?
Yeah, so we've been going for so the we recorded our pilot episode in 2016, We were
Almost
chatting
10
about it
years.
almost 10 years. We're gonna have to
That's
have like a 10
amazing.
year episode, I think. And the main thing is that our lives were very different. So we started talking about it in 2014 or 13 or 14, and we were both fresh out of university. We'd started working together in just, by chance. We were still early careers at that point. There was no home ownership. There was no, full-time job. There was no, none of that kind of thing. But we were also living really close to each other. So I would just drive to Jenny's house. Then COVID happened. And always everything we say is about COVID now, isn't it? It's just had such a sort of long shadow. And it gave us, as you were saying at the beginning, a really nice set of tools to change what we did and reach different contributors. It was an opportunity to change the format so that we had weekly guests. But as you'll know, as soon as you get weekly guests, you massively increase the amount of admin and logistical faffing around that you have to do. So that
We love
sort
you
of,
guests.
love you, don't stop. So that kind of it really helped with Zoom and everything. But at the same time, as you're saying, people just their attitudes to their own free time changed. I think it's because everyone was working from home. Lives got busier in general, workplaces got busier. So it just started getting more and more difficult. And that exhausted us, really, like the change of how to get people involved. So it was, when did we put the advert out, Solange?
Oh, I just started
Was it
my private
2022?
practice, so it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so a couple of years ago, we'd been talking about, God, how do we keep this going? And I remember writing Jenny this really long letter of like, these are our options, and one of them was give up, and the other was expand the team so we can carry on. So yeah, that's how we, I suppose that's the answer. We didn't maintain energy. We changed. Because we lost the energy, really. But then busy lives, doing it for free. There's only so much you can carry on.
Yeah,
And now
absolutely.
that there's five of us, we do have a kind of splitting of responsibilities, which means that you can, people things come up in people's lives, so sometimes we need to step in and do someone else's part. I think all of us have had moments when we've had
Oh, yeah.
that's happened. So,
Yeah, I think we have actually similarly, although a much smaller team, we have similarly kind of found that people playing to their strengths is so key. I could talk to strangers all day long. I love it. I don't mind at all. It's like I'm an extrovert. But if you try to, I mean, truly, poor Lindsay has like gotten so many SOS texts from me when I'm like, how do I plug in my microphone? Like, it's a miracle that like we haven't lost more episodes, touch wood. Oh my God.
Yeah, and we also don't have the quite the same density of episodes. Like, I don't know if you were weekly from the beginning, but we're only monthly. So
Every other week.
my amount of admin and creation and editing, like not creation, but like brainstorming, that I don't have to do nearly as much of that because we only do it once a month. And the flow of it, we like a wave of, oh yeah, we're interested. Yeah, we want to do this. Yeah, we'll do this. And I'm like, well, I gotta schedule you out to like September and it's May. Like we can't record. We just don't have the time to. M making time for the actual recordings, I don't find as time cons like that. It's more the like all the other stuff actually takes longer. And you have to fit it in around all sorts of things.
Yeah, and editing can, I don't know if you find this, editing can be so variable depending on the type of conversation you've had. And even just, and I say this with absolute love, understanding, and respect, just depending on the type of person that you're talking to, because some people just reel it off. and they speak. I'm not one of those people, so I feel like I can say this. Some people just reel it off, and they all of their sentences are in one straight line, and there's a beginning and an end, and they don't digress and all of this. And some people just simply don't think or speak like that. And I've had really wonderful interview conversations that I've had to edit down to 10 minutes because that's what we do. And there's only so much time that people will sit listen to a podcast. And these conversations have been, an hour long. And those I find much more complicated to edit than the 2 hour long, whole episode type edits. But then, we have a really broad variety of people who work in the sector, don't we? So it's kind of it's I guess I really like being able to do that, and it's a way of giving people a platform to speak if they're, just not the kind of people to speak in conferences, for example, or they're always on the TV and you can't get them any other time or whatever.
I think the hardest part has been if people are nervous and you can tell because they're speaking really fast. Like it doesn't matter if you fumble over your words and you can kind of redo them. And we'll try to encourage people to like have a water bottle nearby and like
That's nice.
try to get acquainted with them when they first get started before the recording's even started, because it's like Roxy said, we've had a few people who are English as a second language, and I don't necessarily find their conversation easier or harder to edit. It just kind of depends on more their nervousness.
I had one interview who, and I'm going to say this because I absolutely respect this way of doing it, and this is sort of an encouragement that if you want to, I mean, obviously, we each of us want everybody to collaborate with us as podcasts because we want to hear from everybody and speak to everyone about what they're doing because it's all interesting. If you don't feel that you can have a chat in a way that will make you feel good about what you've said. I've spoken to an interviewee before who I gave this person the questions beforehand, and they said, "I hope you don't mind. I've written answers because I want to be able to fit all the information that I have into this, and this is how I feel most comfortable doing it." I thought, fantastic, yeah, brilliant, yeah,
Yeah,
sounds
that's
great, sounded
really
great.
great. It's nice to be able to adapt to individuals and enable them to be comfortable sharing their knowledge and experiences. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
I
think
would say
that's
also the content of our episodes can be quite fun and light, but also can be quite more often than not are quite heavy. We're talking about the climate crisis, we're talking about, social sustainability, economic sustainability, all of these like aspects of life that are really hard, and it doesn't feel like we're going in great directions right now for the most part. So I think getting people to comfortably talk and feel confident, like we've had some pretty difficult conversations where I've said to people, like, say what you want to say. We'll, you can listen to the episode before it goes out and make sure you feel comfortable with it, because, you're like going out on a limb by speaking to us about this rather difficult topic, very vulnerable. And so we want you to be able to feel solid about it. We don't want to surprise anyone, I think that's really key to getting good information.
And I think that might be what's similar with how you're talking about the C word, with really wanting the interviewee to set the tone or to have the space to set the tone. Because we all so genuinely care about what we do that it's going to be a much more dynamic conversation if we're free or feel free to be that genuine and open. And partly, I think the audio only format can aid with that. But yeah, we're having the people on because we don't have the lived experiences that they do. And the point is to try and share all of kind of what that person wants to share about their lived experience, and then hopefully other people can kind of find something that resonates with them, or think, hey, maybe this is something I can do. Like I joined my local repair cafe after listening to an episode. It's actually the first one we did,
Love it.
And so it's like that's kind of the idea of like if someone is so excited to talk about it and they're so inspired by what they're doing or what they have to adapt or mitigate, then it's that much easier to talk to them.
That's another thing that I find as a host. I'm usually a really like type A preparer type, but I have found, we used to write out like every single question, and we do tend to send people. Lindsay comes up with like a list of questions just to kind of give people an idea about what we're going to talk about. But at the beginning, I always say like, if you're comfortable with this, I'd love to the conversation to just kind of flow as it does, kind of like we're doing now. And I really do think if I'm genuinely asking because I don't know the answer, like I don't want to practice all the questions before unless somebody wants that to feel comfortable. But most of the time it's like it just comes across as so much more genuine, which I didn't realize at first. I think that was something we kind of discovered as I wasn't prepared one day and then was like, oh my God, that was the best episode I've done.
It's nice to have the format of having interviews as well. So bulk episodes and then interviews, because it means that if you know that someone is absolutely stellar on a particular topic and they say, I'm not, I cannot have the chat about it, then you can say, all right, how about an interview? And it's a completely different, it sounds the same, but it's a completely different kind of format.
Yeah, I feel like we didn't start with questions. I feel like we had a few people that, like Lorraine Finch, we knew exactly what she wanted to talk about with her book.
She's great anyway, isn't she?
I feel like we need to have her on a comeback episode, Roxy.
Oh yeah.
I know, absolutely. She's like probably like light years ahead of where she was when she talked to us a year ago or whatever.
Because the conversations do just naturally flow in directions that are interesting that we couldn't have anticipated because we're not the ones who are, again, living it or experiencing it. But
On this topic, how do you find your topics and your people then? So you've got your, as you said, some of the things you're talking about are so heavy. Some of the names you've got are really big. How do you find them? How do you decide?
Roxy gives me free rein. She just shows up.
Like I said, I'll talk to anyone.
So sometimes I'll just give like, hey, this is the person, this is the gig, this is the time, can you make it? And then there's just an email chain and you get the questions and you go. But the actual people finding is kind of one of three ways. One, which doesn't happen nearly as often, but has happened, is people come to us and say, we want to be on your show. We have an idea. That's been really fun. Usually it's me reading an interesting article or finding an interesting news bite or something that's like, oh, that's something I want to learn more about. Or I think other people want to learn more about. And then the third way is the sustainability committee itself is really, really good at networking. We have like a specific person who's our network officer, but we've all been in it for long enough that we've got our own kind of web of contacts. And so it's usually pretty easy to be like, oh, this person on the committee is doing this project with somebody. Let's see if we can get them to kind of talk about it. Or maybe they know someone else who's doing something on like the Go Green project, and so they'll connect us with somebody. But most of the time it's just me going, that sounds interesting. And then kind of cold emailing them. More recently, people have been like, hey, oh yeah, I already know you guys, which has been really fun.
I will say also, like, I feel like with talking to people who are real experts in the field, this is something that I think is a challenge because you can have imposter syndrome. You can kind of be like, oh my gosh, I don't really. And also, like, somehow I've managed to do a lot with sustainability, but truly have no training in this, no, And I think Dr. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson, who I just think is such a great climate leader, obviously climate scientist, not conservator, but she just has like really great in her books. She has several books, has had really great like sort of leadership advice about just like find your kind of overlap of your interest and your, what you're good at and what you love to do. And so that's where I sort of, after hearing that, I was like, or your skills, I think it is. anyway, there's a Venn diagram, and I was sort of like, well, I'm extroverted. I like to talk to people. I'm not really intimidated by a conversation. A lot of people in our field, being like people who like meticulous little tasks and are more introverted typically. So I'm like, ooh, that's a skill set I could kind of tap into and just sort of say, this is going to be my contribution. I'm not going to be an expert in any one aspect of this, but I'm going to be good at amplifying other people's voices. And I think as podcasters, that's a really important skill. It's a really important, just contribution, I guess.
Yeah.
We don't have seasons proper. We kind of have just a run-on show. But we do have kind of like themes that we wanted to try and consciously build up. So
Nice.
this last kind of batch of episodes has been kind of a Latin and South Central America conservator kind of theme. Not like every single episode back to back, but kind of scattered throughout it. But hey, you guys tend to do episodes with kind of segments, yeah? Or is that I've listened to a few episodes where there's been like interviewing someone here and then having a brief chat about it kind of after the chat has happened, whereas ours is just hit record and go.
We did used to, I think, chop and change a little bit within the episode. So have like a chat and then, oh, and this is when we're going to talk about this. And this is going to be a nice way to lead into this episode, this interview, whatever it is. But I suppose now it's just.
We've talked about maybe having sponsored segments,
Oh, yay.
where there'd be like, oh, and you used to have the Agony Aunt.
Oh my God. She's still open for business as an agony aunt. Yeah, if anyone has any questions they want to ask Jane Henderson, our agony aunt,
Dear Jane.
dear Jane, please ask her. She's just the best.
I really like that bit.
I
But
love her.
like various ideas, like there could be a new, I think you did sort of do a news section, but then that doesn't make so much sense when people go back and listen to old episodes.
Yeah,
But
that's why we stopped that.
yeah,
Yeah.
but we did talk about having like maybe a fun facts segment or something, and then a sponsor could sponsor that segment or this kind of thing.
Yeah, I once joked
There's a
that we
lot of
should have like
possibilities.
mistakes corner where
Yes.
every so often you'd have 5 minutes of saying, well, I really fucked that up, didn't I? Wow. And
Yeah.
you just explain what went wrong and
Yeah.
why. But then we thought maybe there wouldn't be. People wouldn't want to do that.
We'd have to be
Sorry.
anonymous.
I wouldn't.
Sharing is
Yeah, yeah,
caring.
yeah. That's true.
The AIC annual meeting, it always ends with the mistake session, and it's like people often quite like high profile, well experienced people will get up and ever, all sorts of different people, but get up and share like their biggest mistake. And it's so fun. I love it.
I
It's like
love
everybody loves
that.
it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
I
it's
love that.
quite
Pretty well attended. It ends up
cathartic.
being
Yeah.
fun.
Oh, or like a sustainability tip. Be good,
There
wouldn't
we
it?
go. Let's
We
end this
appreciate you
episode
guys.
with a sustainability tip.
Yes. The thing that I found amazing is that you just don't run out of topics. And even for you guys, because you've even got a particular focus within conservation for your podcast, yet you don't run out of topics within sustainability. It's, yeah.
I think a happy accident with how we find the episodes. Like, again, it's usually somebody doing something. And so it's making the news or it's making a conversation happen somewhere within either AIC or somewhere else. And it's easy then to be like, okay, what's in a couple months, there's going to be another conference or there's going to be somebody who puts out a new product or a new book or something. So it's catalytically, if we get more people talking about sustainability, then there'll be more people doing things about it. Who then we can talk to about what the things are that they're doing. But we also are broadening kind of like our definition of sustainability. A lot of people still really, especially in the US, really still think of sustainability as an environmental or ecological side of things.
Rinse your plastics kind of sustainability. Yeah.
And it's like that ends up being just so narrow of a mindset that our hope is really that if we bring in the social, bring in the human, bring in economic, these things that are a little bit, maybe still feel a little bit distant from our fields, but really kind of showcasing how it's a paradigm shift more than like these small steps or individual actions. Because there's a lot of, seemingly, there's a lot of people who are like, well, I don't want to change my practice. I don't want to do anything different, but I want to be sustainable, but I don't know what it takes. And if we can show them, oh, well, being sustainable looks like this for some people, hopefully it showcases that there's not one way to do sustainability. There's not one way to be sustainable. It's more of a how, what lens am I putting over my own actions or my own perceptions or how I interact with my community? It then lends itself to being a lot more open to different kinds of conversations.
I feel like this is a really nice opportunity to ask about your reception as a podcast.
Because we're primarily hosted on Spotify, I only get a little bit of analytics. Like I don't have a website for us. And I did just put out a survey on the AIC Dis lists for feedback for our next season. So I'm only got a few responses so far. But that's helping kind of define kind of our listenership and where they're from. Most of it is the US, but I think it's still only about 60% is US. And then it kind of fluctuates, about 10 to 15 is the UK, and then it kind of switches back and forth between like Austria, Germany, France, Canada, all kind of shimmy around at 5 or so%. And every once in a while, like Australia or Asia, but actually no, the South America countries are starting to come up to the top. But that's just because we're talking with more people from that part of the world. We seem to have pretty good feedback. Like we'll have people email questions in about like what is the more sustainable nitrile glove forever question? And so we'll create an episode based on the questions that we get from the community. And every once in a while, I'll get a response after the episode because I'll let them know that, hey, we just did this. If you want more information, listen to the episode or look at the show notes for the resources. We do have people from different countries come and talk about the different projects that they're working on. So there's a little bit of a spike from that country when that episode goes live. And yeah, we've got almost 300 followers who get pushed our episodes every time they go live. And then the rest of the time, it's just us posting on the dis list. And we don't have our own social media. So AIC kind of funnels everything for us. So we send everything to them and then they post on our behalf. Probably then still kind of maintains a US or North America kind of focus. Because I don't know who else is looking at AIC if you're not on our continent.
I would also say that the AIC Sustainability Committee won the presidential award this year at the annual meeting. So that was a really big honor. They don't give out a lot of awards at AIC, so that was cool. And I think it was the first time a whole committee won an award because they had originally asked, like, who can we highlight in particular? And the whole committee was like, look, this is a collaborative effort. We really, really, really do work collaboratively. But I think the podcast, I mean, when Suzanne Davis, who was the president, made the little announcement, she did shout out the podcast as a really important part of that. So I'm proud of that, for sure. So,
Oh, super.
accolades from within the leadership as well.
Think the podcasts are really present now. But it's lovely to have profession-specific ones of the profession talking to the profession. And I mean, you've already talked about scientists and stuff that you talk to outside of the profession. It's sort of quite a privilege to be able to speak to people who are like represent the profession to the outside world, as well.
Yeah, we don't always keep it conservator talking to conservator, but it's cultural heritage preservation, conservation kind of theme in general. Like the one that sticks out in my memory the most as being like conservator adjacent is the one that is one of the ones I did actually, talking with Professor Schofield at University of York with the archaeological context and this weird dilemma of plastic being pollution, but also plastic being the cultural heritage, which I just thought is something absolutely fascinating for conservators in the future. Like, what dilemma are they going to have to face if their aim is to conserve and protect this kind of, is it waste? Is it heritage? Like, how are we going to classify this kind of weird thing that we've never had to deal with historically speaking before? Because usually, like Stone Age, Bronze Age, these things aren't creating damage for themselves and the world around them. But we also work, especially contemporary conservators are working with plastics a lot, and there's lots of questions about how to maintain plastics. And then this is this weird kind of phenomenon of it's plastic. Here's a side of it that I'd never seen anyone talk about before. But it does have ramifications on conservators who are going to be working on this stuff in the future. But it's not always conservators.
We did an episode on 3D printing plastics, and with Jenny and I were the scientist working with those. And yeah, it totally opened my eyes to a whole other area that I find quite intimidating in general. And I think when something is intimidating, we tend to bury our heads in the sand. So it's really important to start talking about these things because they are really important, and they're going to be even more so. Would you guys like to give a little plug for your podcast to our listeners?
Absolutely. If you're interested in sustainability, and I think we all should be because this is our planet and our cultural heritage that's at stake. We're the Green Tea Podcast. Uh-oh, maybe Lindsay, you should give me the full name. I flopped it.
I
We can,
mean, we go
do we
back
need
and
to have
forth
the sub?
between the Green Tea Podcast and Green Tea. Like, it's both. It's fine.
Okay. You can search it on Spotify. Okay, so Green Tea Podcast, we'll just say that. And yeah, we talk about all facets of sustainability. So we talk about social sustainability, environmental sustainability, economic sustainability, and at a really broad lens, the climate crisis, and then also some practical, smaller, kind of tips and tricks. So yeah, I think it's a really, wide-ranging number of conversations with different experts, and I enjoy it, so I hope you do too.
I do. I
And
enjoy it.
the same goes for our listeners. Please follow the C Word podcast. This has been so fun to talk to you guys, and I'm certainly gonna do an official follow because I definitely tune in occasionally, but I think I need to, yeah, follow consistently. So
Brilliant.
yeah,
Love
this has been
it.
wonderful. Thank you so much,
Thank you
guys.
so much for
Yeah, thank you
joining
guys. It's
us.
been really fun.
Thanks.
There's not one way to be sustainable. Here are a few sustainability tips from the Green Tea Podcast. Tip number one, keep talking about the climate crisis. The more that we acknowledge there's work to be done, the more likely we are to actually achieve it. It doesn't need to be alarmist, but it does need to instigate action. So the more that we maintain conversations about the action that is needed, the more likely we are to actually take action. It's amazing what we can do when we have support and a willingness to share conversations and share ideas. And learning from each other, I believe, is basically what the Green Tea Podcast is aiming to be. Is a space where we can learn from each other and hopefully have things that we take away and impact that will impact our own practice. Sustainability tip number two, find your communities. Often on the podcast, we've had guest speakers talk about participating, leading, or founding even different community groups to facilitate and maintain momentum towards sustainable action within our field. Oftentimes, it is much easier to ensure that you're maintaining momentum towards sustainable action when you're working together. Sustainability tip number three, know your waste streams. We use an awful lot of materials in conservation labs, and often a wide variety. And depending on where you live, different waste streams may be available to you. Being more informed about the options available to you will help you then make better decisions about ensuring that materials don't immediately go to landfill. Sustainability tip number 4. Reuse what you can. My lab is known as kind of a scrap hoarding lab, but it's for a good reason. Very often we can find uses for materials that are offcuts from different things or reuse mounts that we've used in the past for different exhibitions. Thinking creatively about the materials you already have in your lab can help ensure that you are not wasting time, money, and resources in purchasing new things every single time. Sustainability tip number 5. Use our resources. The AIC Sustainability Committee has a plethora of resources where you can learn more about different topics that are very specific to your needs, personally, as a lab, and as local communities. To highlight a few, the Climate Resilience Resources for Cultural Heritage, which was an action item resulting from the work of Heldon Trust, offers free resources to build climate resilience plans, including an interactive climate risk map, learning modules, and communities of practice that you can learn from. STITCH, the Sustainability Tools in Cultural Heritage, uses quantitative data and case studies to help people working in cultural heritage make educated, sustainable choices to lower the environmental impact of their work. Additionally, you can check out our wiki, which includes various subjects such as energy use, materials, recycling, and waste management. It also contains an archive of our committee's original content, such as our e-blasts, the Ask an Expert webinar series, and the Green Tea Podcast. All of these resources are available from the Sustainability Committee's website that is nested under the American Institute for Conservation's webpages.
Hi, Solange here. I'm just going to do a little book review here at the end. And this is into a topic that I've been meaning to look into for a while, because a friend of mine was struggling with mold in his house. And he actually discovered that you can use houseplants to remove toxins from the air. And that includes mold. And he actually successfully treated his house essentially by just having lots and lots of houseplants that he discovered were particularly good at removing mold. He told me that he found out about this because NASA had actually done research into this, and I sought out this book, and it's called Eco-Friendly Houseplants by B.C. Wolverton, and it was actually published in 1996, which feels like a little while ago now. And I'm sure there'll probably be more up-to-date information out there somewhere. But I really like this book. And unfortunately, I can't actually keep plants alive myself. I have hopes that one day I will manage it. But yeah, I'm just going to give a quick overview of this book. So B.C. Wolverton, I think, was working with NASA and on this project where they were trying to create healthy indoor environment in sealed living spaces such as spaceships. And what they were worried about was the volatile organic compounds and given off by materials and, in fact, people in space stations. So it's a sealed environment, and anyone who's done an Oddi test will have put two and two together and thought, blimey, what are we surrounding ourselves with, all these different materials? You know, when you see the little lead and copper tokens all corroded just from being in a chamber with some board or some adhesive. And there is a little table in this book that lists a variety of household materials and the chemicals that they give off. And it is a little bit shocking, actually, how much formaldehyde we must be breathing in all the time. And then later on in the book, there's a table that shows the removal rates of formaldehyde by houseplants. And the Boston fern is right at the top of the list, but absolutely tons of these really common houseplants do a really great job of removing formaldehyde. And the book does explain how how the plants do this, and it's to do with the interaction with the soil and the microbes in the soil. So these compounds are absorbed through the leaves and then transported down into the soil, where they get broken down by the bacteria in the soil. And so NASA did experiments, and there's a picture in this book of the NASA biohome. So they built this biohome, which is like a, it's just a sealed environment replicating a home. And and what they've done is they tested the indoor environment before putting houseplants in, and then they tested it afterwards, and it's full of plants. Or they put plants in it, it's not full of plants, but you know. And the results, you know, are remarkable, how much better the air quality is inside, both in terms of volatile organic compounds and the humidity is affected. In fact, I don't think I can find it right now, but there's a little comparison where they've shown how many mold spores are in the air in a room that's like over 70% humidity with a houseplant, and then compared it to how many mold spores are in a room at 50% humidity or lower. It's the room that's the higher humidity but with a houseplant that has much lower amounts of mold spores in the air. So I think that for conservatives, that's really quite interesting information. And for those of you who are worried about light levels, because, you know, if we're thinking about a storeroom, perhaps if you want to grow some plants in a storeroom where there's been problems with mold, or you're worried about the VOCs in the air, then there's a section on lighting. So what kind of lighting you can use to grow plants. And so I think you could, on the basis of what it says here, I think you could grow them just using lights. So yeah, it's really interesting. And then there's, as you go through the book, there's a page for each houseplant, and it shows the data on how effective they are at removing different toxins, and then a little rating of how easy it is to grow, things like that. So how much light it needs and all of that. So I think, for me, I'm terrible at growing plants. So this is actually a really useful book for me, just in terms of advice on how to actually look after houseplants, because there's tons of really useful information in here, including about watering and cleaning the leaves and things like that. So as I know, I definitely have been guilty of overwatering. I think that might be the source of many of my problems with houseplants. And it talks about how much sun they need. But yeah, it's really interesting. And you think, oh, this was published in 1996. Why isn't this more common knowledge? You know, because the number of synthetic materials that we're surrounded by in our homes, it's hard to think about in relation to the toxins that we're then breathing in. The effect on our health and the instances of observationally speaking, more and more people and children have allergies these days. And he's saying that this is the result of the growing number of synthetic materials that we're surrounded by, and how our buildings are more sort of hermetically sealed than they used to be. And I think in terms of building and things like that, I think, and materials that we use to build or furnish our homes, I think there has been an increased awareness since those days when this book was written. But I'm surprised that maybe there's less awareness of how beneficial plants can be at cleaning those environments. So yeah, I'm sure there's more up-to-date research than this book, perhaps. But as a starting point, this is really, yeah, it's really interesting. And I feel like I'm definitely going to see if I can grow some of these plants in my studio, keep the environment in there a little bit more clean.
Thanks for listening. Today you've listened to Solange, Chloe, Roxy and Lindsay. Find us on thecword.show or email us at thecwordpodcast@gmail.com or find us on social media. The intro and outro music is Spring by Dee Dee Mystic, used under Creative Commons Attribution License. This is a Wooden Dice production.